Hey guys, just a little heads up before we get started here. Me and Tommy are doing a live Stand By Your Band Battle of the Bands at Union Hall this very Sunday. That's January 13th at 8 p.m. And whoo doggy, this is a banger. Who we got there, Tommy?
Nikki Glazer.
Holy moly.
Melissa Viasen.
Yes, you're from Saturday Night Live. She's going to be fresh. She's going to be walking out the doors, the hollowed doors of Saturday Night Live at 30 Rockefeller to come to our little show. Our big show with Martin Urbano,
Sean Donnelly,
Shalewa Sharp,
Anthony DeVito,
Caitlin Palufo,
and of course, the rest.
Who could forget the rest? I think that's all of it.
Sounds good.
That sounds like a good number of people that we have. Anyway, it's going to be a great show. We're going to have a bunch of great bands defended. We got like Train, NSYNC versus Backstreet Boys. Who could be better? Who could have more fun?
J.P. McDade and Christy Cello.
J.P. McDade and Christy Cello will also be there.
AKA
who could
the
forget?
Rest.
And who's better than the rest? Nobody.
The best?
Oh, shit. It's going to be a great show. Tickets are cheap as hell. You can get them on Union Hall's website. They're $7 in advance, $10 day of. But yeah, 8 p.m. It's going to be a hell of a time, and we'd love to see you. And we're going to record it. So, you know, come out, be a part of the live audience. Prizes, all that shit, fill out a bracket. I think that covers it.
Yeah.
Without further ado, let's get to the episode.
I can sing real soft. I can sing real loud too. I love a girl. She left me sad and blue and two and you and shoe and boob. And I can sing like this. And I will wake up all my neighbor's kids.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Stand By Your Band. I am Tom Tikar, the dog of Wolf Street. No, the wolf of Dog Street. How could I forget? And I'm, of course, joined by the Prince of Snarkness, Tommy McNamara. Happy New Year, buddy.
Happy New Year. Wow. This is our first record in like 3 weeks.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It feels like only 4 weeks ago. It feels like forever, man.
I will say a quick note. That was a guy doing a parody of Mumford & Sons.
Yeah, that wasn't actually Mumford. It's so it sounds just like them, right?
I think that they tune their guitars better.
Look, we're not criticizing this man.
Okay.
I should give him credit, but I won't. Let's see. I looked him up. God damn it. Why did I forget to do this? This was like a whole thing.
Oh, no. He's everybody. Getting shot.
This man's name is Dion Barry. This is what some might call a viral video.
Did it go over? What kind of views are we talking?
We're talking, it's got 3.2 million views.
What?
I don't know what you call viral, buddy, but if I had $3.2 million, I'd say that'd be a viral amount of money.
I'd agree.
Let's introduce our guest. we have the hilarious Alex Edelman here.
Hey, guys.
How you doing, buddy?
Good. Hey, Tommy. Hi, Prince of Snarkness. That's my favorite. I remember the first time I heard that, I was like, oh, they're doing like, they must have recorded this one around Halloween or something like that. Just a little Halloween name. And then there was a gruel pun, and I was like, boy, well, good. One episode, Halloween. And then I heard another one, and he's like, Prince of Snarkness. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess they record every episode around Halloween or something like that.
Yeah.
That's the only viable excuse.
That is the vibe. Yeah, that is the truth. We have been recording.
I was saying Booerns.
It's been 100 Halloweens that we've recorded on.
Every episode is Halloween.
This is a spooky show.
I'm excited to defend Mumford & Sons.
We're talking Mumford & Sons. Let's say it right now. Yeah, mm-hmm. And we're excited to talk about it. You pitched a lot of bands, and we decided that Mumford was the most hated and made the most sense for this very show.
Yeah, we were gonna do others, but I won't mention them for
because we'll
good
save
grace.
Them just in case we decide to do them later.
Yeah,
there's some fun options,
but boy, Mumford and sons.
Let's get into them, but first let's get into you. How you been, friend?
Good, man.
You've been traveling a bunch.
Oh man, I've been touring this one show. Can I plug too?
Yeah.
I went to this meeting of Nazis in Long Island City back in February.
Mm-hmm. And so you want to plug their event.
Yeah, I want to plug these Nazis. They meet at, actually I have the address. I probably shouldn't say that. They meet at the Creek in the Cave after the open mic. Rebecca will do anything to sell some Mexican food. Yeah, I went to this meeting of Nazis, and I've been talking about it since February, and I've been doing it at a bunch of festivals. I'm doing once at the Virgil on January 30th, and once at Sketchfest in San Francisco on 126.
Hell yeah, we got some piss freaks in SF. Go check them out.
Please do, because I don't know how many fans are dying to see some comedy about a meeting of Nazis.
That sounds really interesting.
It was cool. It's been cool touring this, but I've been dog tired. I did like a month in Australia. I did like 3 months of touring in the UK.
Wow.
I'm going to go back to the UK for a few more months of touring the same show at the end of the year, and you know, like, it's just been, and then I was in Charlotte. Oh, dude, I went to Charlotte, North Carolina.
I was bored
during the daytime for a show, and I took a karate class.
Oh, wow.
At this karate dojo. I put on, like, an Instagram story. It was, like, real cute content.
Yeah, you do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I do a lot of stuff.
Good interviewing, Tom.
No, yeah. Hey, now you do a lot of things,
yeah,
right?
What are some of the things
that you do?
I do a lot of stuff. Thank you, Barbara. But you do, Mr. Dalai Lama, you do a lot of stuff. Yeah.
A lot of comics will just hang out hungover playing 2K in their hotel rooms on their Nintendo Switch. I don't want to name any names, myself.
But I mentioned this to you on Nikki's radio,
yes.
On yours, Nikki's radio show.
No, Nikki's.
Nikki's name is above the line, so yeah,
that's
I'll
true.
Say it. But so, yesterday, I was on Friday night, I was watching the news, and you're not going to believe this. I swear to God, I'm not making this up.
Donald Trump won the presidency.
Yeah, I'm really sad about it.
Orange piece of shit.
Yeah. Original take. But
orange.
This guy in Charlotte
mm-hmm.
was trying to kidnap a lady. She ran into a karate dojo, and the sensei there beat her attacker senseless and held him until the police arrived. And as I clicked on the link, I just knew. It's the same dojo. It's the same sensei.
So you met this guy.
I met this guy. It took a fucking classroom for 2 hours.
Wow.
Sensei Randall of Bushiken Karate in North Charlotte.
Damn.
In a strip mall karate dojo across the street from the comedy condo. He's literally a badass.
That's amazing.
That's crazy.
We met a crazy story.
That's insane. So you've learned from a hero.
I learned from a hero before he was a hero. So I'm cool. I'm really hipster. I was into him before he was a hero.
That is a good segue into Mumford & Sons, too.
Yeah, it really is.
You're a karate hipster.
I heard a joke from a 10-year-old that why did the hipster burn his mouth on the pizza?
Why?
Because he bit into it before it was cool.
Oh, nice.
That is good.
That's
damn,
solid.
That's solid.
I'm like, did your mom tell you that joke? And he's like, no. My dad. Of course.
Damn, that's good.
That's a solid joke.
That's a really good joke.
If you get out of here now from this podcast, you've at least learned one shitty joke about hipsters. But yeah, Mumford & Sons
Mumford & Sons, baby. I was surprised to hear that you were into Mumford & Sons, because it seems like you got your finger on the pulse, baby.
Mumford & Sons has, one of my defenses for Mumford & Sons, and I can form a variously pronged defense for Mumford & Sons.
We've never had a pronged defense.
Oh, yeah. Usually people are just like, oh, but I like them. So, like,
yeah, yeah.
That's not even half a prong.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just a pro. There's no.
That's no fork.
But so, what I would say is that not only I do, thank you for saying I have my finger on the pulse. I would, I don't know. But I do think that Mumford & Sons, they have been the pulse for a long time. And if you like this sort of revivalist music, and lots of people don't, which I think accounts for like a lot of the hate from for them, I think you have to at least appreciate all of the bands that have come out of Mumford & Sons, because they have been influenced by bands that are firmly in the tradition of American music, Americana, stuff that people like, stuff that savvy people like, smart people, singer-songwriter, folksy stuff. And on the back end, they've informed people like Nathan Ratliff or Bear's Den or anyone who plays a guitar in any way similar to that guy that was making fun of them. Like they have made the and they boomed that music into. They're one of the most popular bands.
They made it more popular because like it was definitely being done before them.
Totally,
but like they made it more accessible.
And they were like so. Apparently, what happened was Marcus Mumford. Who's the only one, I think.
He's the only Mumford. Yeah.
They were watching, or they were influenced by the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack.
Wow.
Which is the T-Bone Burnett soundtrack. And then they found old Cro-Medicine Show and Emmylou Harris. And so that's the tradition of music that they were making. But there was like an East London and Shepherd's Bush, which is in West London. There is a like very, very healthy and well-attended and sort of surprising UK Americana music scene. Mm-hmm. And so they came out of that, and obviously they've been this like patron saint since then, but like those guys like were very much you're right, those guys are in the continuum of like Bob Dylan and like, you know, the people that have come after him.
Well, it's crazy how full circle that went in a couple of ways. One, because a Coen Brothers movie, and then Marcus Mumford wrote the music for Inside Llewyn Davis.
Yeah,
he wrote the song.
That is crazy.
And
T-Bone
Burnett did the Basement Tapes with Marcus as the, you know, as the lead voice for that. And their huge breakout in the U.S. is due to them playing on the Grammys in 2009?
I think it might have been 2010 or 11 even.
Something like that with Bob Dylan. They played Maggie's Farm. Yeah. They played this big cross-generational Maggie's
Farm. Let me double-check that because I was just reading about that.
They were nominated for Best New Artist, thing. So it would have been Sign No More.
2011 Grammy ceremony. Because I think that's around the time that I got into them. And I was surprised that I hadn't heard that album before.
Sure. It took everyone. It really shocked people because, like,
Sign No More is the first that, like, was immediately a hit overseas.
But, sure.
It took them a while to get some, you know, their message in the bottle across the pond.
I think actually the way that the British bands work is that if they blow up here, they really blow up back in the UK. Mm-hmm. So everyone who blows up here then immediately blows back up in the... It's like Australia, but even more so, like... Like, you know, or it's weird because the Killers blew up in the UK first. Uh-huh. And so early ads for the Killers in the US said, see the band that the Brits think is the biggest band we're missing.
Even though they were Vegas Mormons.
They were Vegas Mormons. Well, they exploded in the UK because the UK loves that kind of like stadium filling music, mm-hmm. which is why they've had all these out. Like, if you think about big arena, think about, let's be honest, like fun anthemic music for white people. Like a lot of that has come at like Oasis, Coldplay, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones. Like, if there's an arena with a white band,
maybe the
in
only
it,
time we'll hear all those bands in the same sentence.
Really? I mean, I think if you think
I guess
about
it makes sense because they are an arena. But yeah, I guess I feel like you don't hear Coldplay get mentioned with the Beatles.
Sure, and even
I guess that they should
absolutely, and even the Killers, which isn't a British band. Obviously, they're Mormons from Vegas, but like. You know, bands that hit big over there tend to be big arena sound bands. They love their anthemic,
it's weird
ambitious bands.
I hate to talk about Coldplay again because I know we've done it plenty of times. It's weird that that's what Coldplay became because that's not what they were to start out with.
No, but they were ambitious, and I think
they didn't turn into that like that arena rock shit until 3 to 4 albums in. I mean, I guess that Speed of
Sound
a little
bit. Sure, like Milo Zalato is really...
Well, Viva La Vida was like their big jump into like, we're going to be U2 now. Like, we want to be U2. And they literally like got the same producer. Like,
They pulled out the big guns, but I would argue that some of it works. Like Charlie Brown, which is a Coldplay song.
I don't dislike all the new Coldplay. It's just interesting that they went from... It's just such a... I felt like it just jumped from what they were doing into something that
they became so and like Queen is another example of guys that were making music for.
Now who is Queen?
No.
This whole show.
There's a new movie out that will explain it in a handy way, but the ending is really sad.
They sell out, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Bunch of
they
sellouts.
Sell out.
It's just a Coke commercial at the end.
I watched the movie. The amount of liberties that they take with like the actual story, I'm like, did Queen break up? Because they break up in the movie, and then I Google it. I'm like, Queen didn't break up.
Uh-huh.
We never broke up. And he's like, I want to do the solo thing. And then, like, that's not an amazing Freddie Mercury accent, I'll give it to you. That's also my Australian accent and my Scottish accent. I want to do the solo thing.
They were like, I got straight AIDS. It wasn't the normal kind.
Oh, God. Did you see Christian Bale's speech the other day? Christian Bale's speech at the Golden Globes last night.
Yeah, I saw it. So funny.
It's shocking because his whole career is American accent. He's like, I want to thank everybody that met me.
Thanks, Adam McKay.
Yeah, he was like, wait, Christian Bale? I knew he was foreign. I didn't know he sounded like that.
It's crazy, he is like Cockney, yeah.
Joel Kambooster tweeted, he's like, I thought Christian Bale was doing a British accent, and it made me furious.
I saw Joel's tweet, and that's the only reason I know what this is. I only follow Joel.
In real life? I saw him tweet over his shoulder in the coffee shop. But yeah, I really like, so sorry to bring it back to Mumford, like they started this whole movement of revivalist music or traditionalist or American, mm-hmm. like, and they brought it back, not from the dead, but like there were a whole bunch of fringe bands that were doing this for a long time, and you can and yeah, they popularized this brand of music in a huge way, and there's been a wave of interest and reinterest in sort of...
Then you get like the Lumineers and...
Lumineers I could see you hating more, to be honest.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. See, I got into all this shit at the same time, which is weird because I was into Fleet Foxes before that, which isn't quite the same, but it's similar to me. It's like... It's like hipsters acting like they're like old, like they feel old or something.
Well,
it's weird.
See, I would resist that classification. So
I like it
boxes.
Though. I'm not even really making fun of it because I do enjoy. I'm a sucker for it.
Sure,
but it feels like people who don't authentically, you know.
So my favorite music person of all time in comedy. He's also a comedy person. This guy Eddie Gorodetsky. He did Bob Dylan's radio show, the Theme Time Radio Hour, and he's also ran on a bunch of sitcoms. He was a Boston radio DJ, but he created the show Mom. He's really...
Yes, I know Mom.
I met him once, and I was so nervous. And he knows so much about music. He's famous for knowing all this stuff about music. And I mentioned Mumford & Sons, or I wrote to him about Mumford & Sons. And he said to me, he's like, I'm not really a big fan of that revivalist stuff.
Yeah.
And so people who know... the traditions or people who actually know like T-Bone Burnett type music in a natural way, some of them aren't crazy about like sort of this revivalist stuff in the same way that like I look at the Lumineers and I'm actually like, I'm not crazy about this, given that, you know, this is way more way more candid than I think I'd ever be about. Like, I don't love saying negative stuff about,
it feels like whichever one you got into first would be the one that you like.
Totally.
Because I had that with like Panic at the Disco and Fall Out Boy when they first came out. It was like if I heard one or the other first, I think I wouldn't like the other one as much.
The thing that made me dislike the Lumineers off the bat was seeing the two little girls on the television show Nashville cover that Hey Ho song.
They
made them do it on the show like three or four times, and I freaking love the TV show Nashville. It's done by Kelly Kahuri, who has an Oscar, I think, for Thelma and Louise.
Oh, wow.
And like is really, really talented TV writer. And like the show is so good. It's like the grand old soap opera, I guess you could call it.
Yeah.
But like I really, just seeing these two girls sing like, and Bowery, like it made me so upset. Like it was so cute. It made me really, really dislike them. Like, you can't just steal American country music down to Maisie and Lennon.
Yeah.
Names of the girls singing. I'm like,
oh, no.
Maisie and Lennon can't be singing this on Nashville for the third time so they can fill the 43rd minute of screen.
Have you seen her spinoff, Marvelous Mrs. Maisie?
I hate this joke. I want to go on record as hating this joke. The Princess Snarkness, indeed. The Dark Princess Snarkness. But yeah, I mean, like you said, they've gone full circle, Mumford & Sons. They've the Basement Tapes, which is... is that common knowledge, I guess, the new Basement Tapes?
I don't think so.
I remember it, especially that song. Let's play it. Let's play Kansas City. So it's a really cool project where there was all these Bob Dylan lyrics that they found that he'd never put to music.
Or bad demos that were on the table or something.
And then T-Bone Burnett just kind of assembled this group of musicians.
And T-Bone Burnett is one of my, like, five favorite musicians.
Oh, yeah.
I listen to you time and time again.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
While you tell me just what's right.
Sorry, I'll try to avoid mumbling.
You tell me a thousand things a day, then sleep somewhere else in the night. Going back to Kansas City.
Team number nine.
And I love you, dear. But just how long can I keep singing the same old song?
Yeah, that's a good song. That's a good time.
I mean, T-Bone is so good. Have you seen him in the Larry Sanders Show?
No.
Oh, he is great.
I need to go back and rewatch the Larry Sanders Show. I haven't seen it since I was a kid.
It is so funny. I was thinking of a joke the other day because Colin Quinn plays like the son of the producer Rip Torn. And every line of the episode, I'm not kidding, is one of the funniest lines of television. Like every line that Colin Quinn is involved in. And some of it's like not super politically correct. And the kid's a loser, and he's the only one who doesn't respect Larry Sanders. And he walks into Larry Sanders' office, and he's got a trophy that's a golden peanut. And he points at it, and he goes, "What's this?" And Larry Sanders looks up at it, and Rip Torn goes, "Ah, Cully, my boy. In 1988, the Peanut Growers Association of America named Larry their Nut of the Year." And Larry Sanders goes, "Yeah, I was pretty nutty in the 80s. And then Colin Quinn, there's like a dead silence, and he doesn't laugh. He just looks at Larry Sanders. He just goes, "Ugh, you proud of that?" Just
That's
like
great.
So lacerating.
I gotta go back
but,
to that.
Yeah, T-Bone Burnett is on the show singing something, and he's really funny, and like he's behind so much of this stuff that if you're listening to this and you don't know who he is, he's behind so much of it. If there's something with a guitar in a movie that you like, T-Bone
yeah.
did it. Mm-hmm. Like I think he did
Crazy Heart
with oh gosh, that he's not an EGOT, but he's an ego, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitely got the O. He's definitely got the Oscar for some stuff, and I'm a huge T-Bone Burnett fan, so he got all these musicians together, some really great musicians with Marcus Mumford.
He just walked the line, too.
Yeah, of course. I mean,
of
like,
course.
He's a genius. People respect him, and he hasn't put out, I think, a solo album since, like, 1982, right? Like, what's his...
Yeah, I think that is...
He is one of those towering figures in music.
Oh,
you know,
totally.
Yeah,
and he's literally a tall guy, apparently. I think him and... I can't remember if he's married to Alison Krauss. Somebody.
That is right.
Is he?
I believe that's right. What did that just...
Scroll down to...
It's in... Not no, really. Life. Where's personal life?
God personal life.
I'm just going to search Krauss.
Yeah. The bluegrass. It says.
In which he united. Oh, wait. Maybe not.
Producing Robert playing Alison Krauss. Here, keep going down. I mean, Harris, it just says work in films.
Work in films. Oh, so no.
Oh, no,
I guess not.
But he's done a lot of stuff with Elvis Costello, and he's a really well-regarded guy, and putting all these people together to do Dylan stuff. I think Dylan... speaking at the risk of, I think Dylan is comfortable with Mumford and Sons as being situated squarely behind them. And they've also fulfilled a promise that I think a lot of people in the 80s and 90s, and I'll avoid mentioning names, but a lot of people in the 80s and 90s were held up as next Dylan. And I think Mumford and Sons were the only people, maybe because they started the revivalist movement, who were held up as sort of in the spirit of Dylan. And then sort of being seemingly given that co-sign by doing that Maggie's Farm with the Avett Brothers and Dylan himself.
The Avett Brothers too. Yeah.
That's who I was going to say is
they're
like
so good.
I prefer the Avett Brothers a little more. I feel like their catalog's a little deeper.
Oh, they're so good.
They feel a little more, I don't know what it is. Cause it's not like these guys are like industry produced or something like that.
No.
Mumford's, they did.
They're Arcade
really
Fire.
Fast,
they're
though.
Arcade Fire produced.
Yeah. They just blew really fast, but like something about there was something nicer. There was more to dig your teeth into with the Avett Brothers for me.
I mean, I hear that.
You listen to the Head and the Heart also. I got into them.
Yeah, the Head and the Heart is. I saw them live a few. That song "Happiness Is Not a Place."
Uh-huh.
I don't want to be here. No.
Yeah.
Like I saw them live in a small club. After a show, I did a show at Duke, and my friend Jesse Rubin, who's a really great musician, said, "I'm opening for the Head and the Heart tonight." And so I went down to this tiny club in Raleigh, North Carolina, and they absolutely blew the roof off the place. It was so good, but like they're very much in the spirit of Mumford and Sons.
Sure,
like,
no, that's the thing. All these bands got me into the other one. Like, they all sure. got me into each other a little bit. Tommy, did you were you into any of this shit?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely. I remember I got into Mumford & Sons first because I was working at WFNX for a summer.
Oh, Boston that's Alternative great. Rock I knew that. Yeah, yeah. I've heard you mention it before on the podcast. Yeah, yeah. But like...
And that was like the summer they broke was the summer I was working there. So listen to them all the time. And but I remember I got really annoyed with I love the song and I loved it then. But I got so sick of Little Lion Man because I had to,
you had to bleep
sure.
it.
Well, I had to edit their podcast and they wanted to use it as the outro for every podcast.
Uh-huh.
So I would just have to listen to the chorus like 50 times in a row. And sure. it was the bleep version. And they bleep it in a really annoying way, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that the... I really fucked it.
Yeah, but they did one of those edits where it's like crashing glass instead of saying fuck you.
Oh, that's
like,
so much worse.
It drove me crazy. Yeah.
Just violence? Yeah. Is the word? Let's skip a little bit.
This is a great song, though.
This is... I love
it. So good. This is from Sign of One.
Yeah. I think this was their first lead single. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it was. This one was huge.
I did feel like I hadn't heard anything like
but
it.
But here in the background, that subtle...
Weep for yourself, my man. You'll never be what is in your heart.
I haven't listened to this song for a bit, so I'm, like, enjoying it.
Yeah. Little lion, man. You're not
as brave as you were. The bridge for this is pretty solid, though.
Yeah. I'm going to skip up a little bit.
Sure. Sansi, I think everyone in this band is a really good musician.
Yeah, yeah.
Teddy
Mumford
Duane
is a great musician. Mumford's he plays multiple instruments well.
Totally, but Teddy Duane is a star, and Winston Marshall's a star. Like, all these guys are really, really solid.
They play instruments I've never even heard of. Like the dobro.
The dobro.
Yeah. The dobro. Is that like a bro fan of the Doughboys?
What is that?
Country Winston plays the dobro.
Country Winston. That's Winston Marshall, I think. Right? The white Winston.
Of course.
It was not your fault but mine. And it was your heart on the line. I really fucked it up this time.
Insert the crashing glass.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I want to say, so regarding the surprising F-bomb in the chorus, I really fucked it up this time. Marcus Mumford said, "We weren't even going to put the song on the album. There were industry people asking, is there any way you can write a different word? We'll do anything."
He said, and he was like, anything?
It was a casting couch video.
Do you have a dobro that we can play? Then he said, we tried it. It was just horrible. It didn't work at all. But now I have my parents agreeing with me as well. My mom's justifying it to people. There's no other word that fits. It has to be that one.
I really messed it up this time. Which, by the way, I think was the radio. Wasn't there a radio version? That's clean?
Maybe they did do one like that.
That is so funny that, yeah, messed up. I really screwed it up.
I really love, by the way, radio edits of people would relentlessly edit Killer songs, which made me crazy because the Killers do these pauses. And so I remember just listening to a pause. What's that song? You sit there in your heartache, waiting on some beautiful girl too. They say that. So I remember listening to. I remember listening to it on the radio, and there's a verse in there where it goes, "They say the devil's water, it ain't so sweet. You don't have to drink right now." And then there was a pause, and they just added K Rock, but you can go beat it. And it made me laugh. It
was like, DJ.
Yeah, it was genuine. But like, there's a Viva La Vida. You were talking about Viva La Vida, the Coldplay album.
Yeah.
Somebody mashed it up. With a Jay-Z freelance, with a Jay-Z freestyle freelance.
I feel like the
one of
Jay-Z's
freelance. You know when Jay-Z freelances is. But there's a Jay-Z freestyle that they mashed up with Viva La Vida, and it's on. There's a mashup album off it called Viva La Hova, which you can find somewhere online and is worth a listen. But there are so many producers, that like in one of the bridges, they're like. Terry Urban, and like they get, you know, like
sexy woman
saying the DJ name is
Tom
like
to come.
Yeah,
can I tell you the most egregious one of these I heard the other day on the radio?
What is this?
You're full of
shit. WKRP.
Would you hold my WKRP if I saw you at the Highlight Ballroom?
And I know there'll be no more Man Cow Mondays.
I used to do a joke about how every morning radio DJ, there was one guy who was the role was one guy was horrible and the other guy was really cultured. Uh-huh. It would be like one guy's like Fraser Crane and the other's like a monster. So it'd be like, you're listening to Jackknife and the Swan here. Jackknife and the Swan here.
Before we get too much further in, I want to go ahead and listen to Jared's voicemail because I'm sure we've probably already talked about stuff that he wants to discuss.
I can't wait for this. As a listener, I can't wait. As a long-time listener, I can't wait for thee.
So, because it's been a while, we haven't heard from Jared, at least in the last episode. So, if you're not familiar, in this segment, the owner of the Comedy Attic in beautiful Bloomington, Indiana, where I will be January 17th through the 19th, running my Comedy Central half-hour set. So, come check that out. It's going to be a good time. And bring in some really great comics to open for me. It's going to be a good time. Jared, the owner of that very club, you know, some might call him a hater of some of the music that we talk about on this show. And this is our segment called They Went to Jared.
What's up, y'all? It's this week They Went to Jared. The boys are going to have a guest on defending Mumford & Sons. I'm on the Fast and the Furious ride right now at Universal. And you can hear Tyrese in the background. He's being robbed by someone. Mumford and Sons. I think I just said Mumford. I can't really hear very well. Not The Rock, but the other one. He just showed up. Oh, there's The Rock. Hobbs is one of the characters' names. The guy who's in Pitch Black, whatever his name is, he's in this too. Anyway, so Mumford & Sons is horrible. Musically, they're really bad. More importantly, this ride is really weird. Nothing's really happening at the moment. There's like a scene going on, and I don't know, it's really weird. People really hate, I will say this, people hate Mumford & Sons more than they should. Certainly they're not good, but they're not nearly as bad as people think. All right. Thanks, guys.
I now want the new thing for this year to be how crazy of a place can Jared record these
voicemails
in? That's
a good challenge. Yeah, he told me that he was there. He said, I'm at Universal. I'll do my best. I want to say that Fast and Furious ride is one of my favorite parts of Universal.
Oh, wow.
It's maybe my third favorite. It's The Simpsons, then the Harry Potter.
So
and
I want to defend the Fast and the Furious ride. I want to defend the Fast and the Furious ride. All right. First of all,
Diesel
Jared.
Trying to think of.
First of all, Jared, it's Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
You monster. You don't know who the... Really, how many Fast and the Furious movies are they going to have to make before you realize that it's Caprezio from Saving Private Ryan making an appearance in hologram? How are you not grateful to be on the Fast and the Furious ride? It's, first of all, the ride's called Supercharged. So use that. And it replaced the Beetlejuice ride. So were you really...
Oh, man,
yeah,
that's messed up.
They replaced the Beetlejuice ride, which was the Beetlejuice's Rock and Roll Graveyard Review. And it's an entirely new... it's like an entirely new plot and theme for Fast and the Furious.
Oh,
and
shit.
Usually... That's like billions of dollars worth of
God
budget. So you know what?
Sorry.
Like, what are you doing? Are you interrupting my defense of the Fast and the Furious?
Hold on. This is the wrong with having these damn articles.
It's got. Hold on, let me finish. It's got Pepper's ghost in it. Not a lot of people because Pepper was killed in one of the previous installments. I mean, technically, look, the ride isn't canon. It's not actually part of the Fast
not?
And the Furious. It's not part of the Fast and the Furious universe. It's not considered canon, but. I mean, it's got appearances from Dominic Toretto, Letty, Hobbs, Owen Shaw, who's looking for revenge on Dominic. It's
Owen
huge.
Owen Benjamin.
Owen Benjamin. Are you triggered, buddy? Are you triggered?
I guess I'll have to move to the mountains and do comedy.
By the way, I Googled, would you like to guess the title of Owen Benjamin's special?
Unafraid.
No.
Ooh.
I will give you a hint. It's the same title as Dennis Miller's special and Joe Rogan's special.
I actually
special.
Know this because I saw someone tweet about it.
Unapologetic or something?
It might have been me.
Yeah,
what
yeah,
is
yeah.
it?
No, it's Triggered.
Triggered.
There are They're five comedians. Specials.
And by the way, that's crazy.
Bill Maher's special was called Triggered.
Was it?
Before,
I didn't know about
before he renamed it Live from Oklahoma. Because, and you can bet anything that someone else besides Bill Maher made that decision.
Yeah.
They were like, we can't call it Triggered. There are already four comedians who have specials with the name Trigger. One's Dennis Miller. The other is Joe Rogan. And between the two of those, that is Bill Maher's entire... That Venn diagram is pretty tight.
Yep. That Vin Diesel
It's a crescent moon. Yeah, that Vin Diesel gram. Which brings us back to Jared, you ungrateful man. First of all, I agree with you. Mumford & Sons doesn't agree with nearly. I mean, there wasn't a lot to argue with.
No, Jared, you went easy on the. I mean, you seemed distracted. Fair enough. what a gem of a man. To, yeah.
Oh, that was sacrifice. That was so funny.
You got to wait in line to do these rides. He sacrificed part of his experience to do this.
That was so much funnier than
I
am.
It is a long ride.
I'm so embarrassed that was funnier than me. When he was doing it, I was like, "This is a better joke."
We
got
to give Jared a list of what. Like the bands that we're going to do are so that he can go to different locations around the world and we can play a Where in the World is Jared.
Guys, I'm a Magic Mountain and I just think that you guys are being a bit unfair to Creed. So we
really need to up the Patreon if we're going to fly Jared to Abu Dhabi and shit.
Oh, that's so funny.
Jared's like, I am in Guantanamo Bay.
It was surprisingly easy to get here. All I had to do was smuggle some C4 onto an airplane.
And speaking of that, CB4, good movie. The word, I forgot the name of the band I wanted to say. God damn it. Who did Shillelagh with Sharp defend?
Red Wine.
Yeah. UB40. That's what I was trying to think of. God
Sean
damn.
Patton did 311, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I was trying to think of UB40.
My first album was Three Doors Down's Away from the Sun.
Oh, that's what you called it?
That's what it's called. Away from the Sun is Three Doors Down. It wasn't 311. It was the band called Three Doors Down that no one remembers.
Oh, no. We did an episode about it.
Yeah,
really?
Three Doors Down.
Wow. Right? That is, to me, that band is indefensible.
With Dan Sheehan.
Let's go back to Mumford.
Yes, let's go back to Mumford. I took you off track there with Jared's voicemail.
I've got another reason to like Mumford & Sons, by the way.
Yes.
First of all, they're cool. They have, they do this thing called Gentlemen of the Road.
Okay.
Which is they make these stopover music festivals. It's a mobile music festival. They bring to places that don't get a lot of business and attention, and they put on these mobile music festivals, and they're really cool. And they have it documented by this guy Marcus Haney, and Haney, who I've never met, but I seem to know like 10 people who know this guy. Haney's thing is that he doesn't pay for music festival tickets or seek credentials. He likes to sneak in. That's like part of the experience. Ah. So like he snuck into the Grammys when Mumford & Sons was nominated and won a whole bunch of stuff. And he's done a film called No Cameras Allowed, which I think is on the internet. And it's really cool. He's just like a really cool guy. And Mumford organized this big thing for the Grenfell Fire. And like they're really politically interested. I think as guys, they seem to be fairly decent folk, and they're interested in comedy. I've seen them at a few different like comedy shows.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I opened for Simon Amstell, and they were there. And afterwards, I was like, Marcus,
I've heard he's incredible. Awesome. I've never seen.
He's a really dude. He's a really great comedian.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Like, I didn't have a great conversation with Marcus Mumford because we were both in an altered state.
That's what I like to hear.
But I went to, I saw MGMT do one of the best festival sets I've ever seen in my entire life.
Really?
At Glastonbury. Oh my God. MGMT puts on an absolutely incredible live show. It's so good.
How recent was this?
That was 2014 or 2015 when I saw MGMT. But no, it was 2014. But they were in this, and they put them on in a smaller. They could have put them on the main stage, but they put them on the second biggest stage.
Yeah,
and the place was overstuffed. It was a Saturday night. They absolutely crushed. And Kids is such a hit. And MGMT travels with this guy whose name I can't remember, but he's like Catalonian or something like that. And he live animates behind them. So they've got a guy who they refer to as like the, you know, fifth or sixth member of their band or something. And he's constantly like messing around with and it's just a really incredible show. And Marcus Mumford was standing there with his girlfriend at the time, and we're both watching the show, and I looked and I saw the hat and I was like, I think it's Marcus Mumford. And
man, I'm getting sold. I mean, I'm not gonna pretend like I like hate Mumford and Sons or anything, but I'm neutral still, I think.
Oh, sure, most people
I like what I'm hearing. You know, all I really need to hear is that he's a comedy fan. I'm like, he sounds like a good guy.
He'd be aware of a lot of the folks that are in the same orbit as us, but he's really tight. So when he was doing this, the reason I know about them, I guess, or I know about their background is because the comedy scene, the comedy scene and the music scene in London are tied pretty tightly together. So this East-West London music scene sort of intersects with Laura Marling and Alfie Brown and King Charles, who I don't really like, who's a musician I really am not like psyched about, but I've sort of come around to. Mm-hmm. But like comedy and music used to be like mixed together. And so some comedians have emceed their Gentlemen of the Road like road shows and live concerts, and they did a pop-up tent at Glastonbury, which was a really small tent with some really great musicians, and like they will call in their star power to play in like the middle of nowhere, so that places that never get music
That's really cool.
So yeah, Gentlemen of the Road.
I want to say Laura Marling, I love her first album is incredible, Last I Cannot Swim, and Marcus Mumford plays drums on it.
Yes, there. So damn. he produces all
cred.
He produces all this stuff. So I met him after Amstel's thing, and I was like, we watched MGMT together, and he brought up King Charles. He's like, oh, I'm producing this guy, King Charles's album. And I'm not exaggerating. I was like, oh, I don't like him.
You just said that to
me. Yeah, I was like, I don't like him. Because I had met him, and he was rude to another comic in front of me.
I don't like that.
And then I saw he was around. But to his credit, he's really interested in comedy. And I met him again at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival that year. And I was like, oh, dude, I ran into Marcus Mumford. He's producing your album. He's like, yeah, Marcus is amazing. And so, I mean, these guys have... These guys all work together. They're all really, really close, and some of them have done really well. And Bear's Den, who is a favorite of people who seem to not like Mumford and Sons, are really, really, really close with them. You'd love Bear's Den. They're really fun. And
I'll check out Bear's Den. I'll give you that.
We should. So when you did mention that they were good politically, there's something we have to bring up.
We have
up.
A game.
The
for
only
you.
Controversy that comes up when you Google Mumford
Jordan
and Sons.
Peterson thing?
Yes, it
Jordan
is.
Peterson.
Yeah.
And,
the only thing that comes up when you Google Mumford and Sons controversy. This is the only
truly
blip
the only
on
thing.
There.
They had a picture with Jordan Peterson.
Is this after Grenfell? This is like the after Grenfell thing, right? I heard about this too.
Yeah, I think it was relatively recent.
I think it was in August. The picture came out. And it was taken in May.
I saw a really funny tweet about this, which is said, I thought they were Tories, but I thought they were my dad's a vicar Tory, not worried about white birth rates Tory. Which is like, you replace the word Tory with Republican, pretty solid joke.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think what it was they just had like an open house and someone invited Jordan Peterson. And it's one of these things where like, I think.
They got asked about it and they talked about it a little bit.
Oh, were they, can I make a guess? So I only know that there was a photo, but can I make a guess what their...
Sure.
That they were like having open...
I'll allow it.
Were they having like open... They were having like... They're like, oh, we had an open door and I want to defend my band's right to like hear as many voices as possible, because I think I know one person in the band without throwing them under the bus who'd like be interested in that. And
think,
like,
so what I read, what they seem to have spoken about with it is I think it was Mumford who said that he had read his books and he agreed with his psychological ideas, but that he wasn't so sure about his like socio-political shit.
Sure.
But he was open to it. He was like, we don't want to get political as a band.
Yeah, they're really
not. Like, we got into music to make music and not to be political.
They've held that line for a long time, which is crazy.
It's the exact opposite of Bob Dylan.
Yeah, I don't love it. That is something that I'm not a huge fan of.
But you know, it's not like they haven't been socially active. It's not like they don't do a shitload of stuff for charity. It's not like Mumford hasn't been the musician organizing the most stuff in response to this Grenfell fire, which no one has done. But yeah, I'm sure that they are they're probably squarely apolitical in terms of...
Well, we have a game that we've prepared for you, and the listeners, you guys can play along. And the idea here is it's kind of like, are you more of a Jordan Peterson fan or a Mumford & Sons fan?
Is this like where where someone was, oh, Pat Monahan on his Dave Matthews. I keep referencing that. Pat Monahan's Dave Matthews thing said that, like,
this is a former episode. I think you talked about it off the air.
Off the air?
Yeah.
He said that he smuggled an anonymous quote from Hitler into his yearbook, or he smuggled a quote from Hitler into his yearbook by attributing it to anonymous. So, like, is this going to be one of those things where they're going to be like, okay, it's Jordan Peterson or who?
It's or Mumford and Sons.
Okay,
so
go
who
for
said it.
So the name of the game is Mumford and Sons are more deserving of places in the work or more deserving of jobs in the workplace than daughters. Man, that was clunky.
And you're going to have to say that before every question.
Yes, I am. So is this a quote from Mumford and Sons or Jordan Peterson? Man is a giddy thing.
That's Mumford and Sons.
That is Mumford and Sons.
Yeah.
Tommy, do you want to play too? Are you willing to take the risk?
Yeah, I'll play too.
Okay. Witches do exist. They just don't exist the way you think they exist. They certainly exist.
That seems a little dreamy for Jordan Peterson, but
yeah, it does.
It does, but I think it might be Jordan Peterson.
I'm going to say Jordan Peterson, and he follows it by saying, and they're hunting me.
Yeah. It is Jordan. It is Jordan Peterson, and he is, of course, talking about women.
Of course.
But it's weird. He has this whole quote where he's like, well, in movies, there's witches.
By the way,
that doesn't make any sense.
By the way, I saw him speak, and he is such a scumbag. Like, I'm not one of, I'm sure I'm going to, a few people listening to this are going to be like, well, you shouldn't paint him with that. He is a bad dude, and he's like Ben Shapiro in that his arguments mostly consist of saying wrong things very quickly and confidently. Do you ever know
so
Ben Shapiro is always like, he always talks like this, and then he finishes his points with like a stop. And so like, so that
sounds
exactly,
like he's smart.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it sounds like, Ben Shapiro sounds like one of the smartest men in America. Mm. But like, I'm yeah, sorry. Go ahead. I'm apolitical.
Okay.
I'm like Mumford and Sons. Politically neutral.
All right. Be more like the man you were made to be.
I think that's Mumford and Sons.
I say Jordan Peterson.
That is Mumford and Sons.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Little trickster, Tom.
Yeah. The next one is, the cure is enforced monogamy.
I think that's a hot mic moment from Marcus Mumford. That's Jordan Peterson.
Oh, you didn't let me finish. That's got a cute rhyme. No, that is. Sorry, Tommy, I didn't let you. I said
and
it.
And the cure's monogamy.
Enforced monogamy.
That's where I get to put my pee-pee.
I want to hear the context for that, but I don't want to hear the context for that. You know, like
he was saying it was like that was his cure for like incels committing violence.
Yes,
is
that was exactly it. So
women
there was a guy in Toronto who ran people over with a van because he was mad at God for women rejecting him. And so this is what Jordan Peterson suggested is that women be forced to do this.
Women be forced to do this.
Women be being forced to be shopping.
Oh my God.
Okay, what about this one? I got two more. Weep, little lion man. You're not as brave as you were at the start.
Jordan Peterson. No, that's okay. Mumford and Sons.
Okay, and the final one. Women do not deserve to have vaginas. Men should have both penises and vaginas so they can have sex with themselves without the need for women.
You're kidding.
That one's a trick question. That's just something I found in Tommy's journal.
Oh. Tommy, the Prince of Starkness. The Prince
Sorry,
of Rampant Misogyny.
That might not have been a great Instagram.
I was trying to record an Instagram video, and I'm going to say, the last few minutes have been tough for content.
You won the game.
I got every single question.
Yeah,
I know my
did.
Mumfords. Do you know your Mumfords? I'm one of Mumford's sons.
Ooh.
Or at least I'm a nephew or something like that.
Oh, man.
That'd be a fun name for the fans.
Mumford's. The sons?
The sons.
Oh, that is
the
good.
Sons.
Let's listen to another song before we go to Facebook.
Cave.
Let's hear Cave.
Can't wait to hear Casey James Salengo or somebody weigh in on
Hey, nice Casey James Salengo reference.
I like Casey James Salengo, man. Everyone, he's really,
who doesn't?
I don't want to be like, what if I just start shouting out comics I really enjoy?
Name names of people you don't enjoy.
Let me tell you who. Let me tell you who is my favorite comedian. Ryan Hamilton. Oh, sweet.
Hell yeah. This is The Cave. Dun, 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 dun.
Am I allowed to talk over this a little bit?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. It's empty in
the valley. No, so I love this song, but my I think that this is my favorite of their songs, and I think it's off Side No More, right? Is it off? It's off Side No More. And I think it really captures sort of the, I like the earnestness of Mumford & Sons. I like the try-hardness of Mumford & Sons. And so, like, this song really captures it. And if you go to the bridge of this song, which is in, give it 5 or 6 seconds, but then go to 2:30 or something.
2:30? That's when I have my dentist appointment.
Oh, shut up. This is filled. How do you guys, how do you get laid?
I really do have a dentist appointment tomorrow at 2:30.
Do you actually?
Yeah, yeah. To say, 'cause I need freedom now, and I need to know how to live my life as it's meant to be.
See, I love that. I love this. That's what I got about that. The hairs on the back of your arm go up.
I love it.
See, they really go for it. And by the way, seeing that live in a small tent at Glastonbury is like one of the coolest moments of my life.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And no, like, I can't imagine it. Like, that sounds incredible.
It's
and
really...
They, I heard that they... I can't remember who told me this, but it was like right after one of their big concerts at like an arena. They was like sold out, so this person couldn't get in. And then there was a small venue that they happened to be doing a secret show at, like right around the corner after. I love that shit.
They do that. The Killers, by the way, to their credit, do that shit all the time.
Arcade Fire do too. They did it in Chicago. They played in the lobby after the show.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
afterwards,
like...
with the Killers, you have to hear their Mormon message. They hand out pamphlets and shit.
Yeah.
The only way to heaven is by buying our new album. But by the way, I actually think like these arena. I love aspirational music that's aspirational musically. And I think what it comes down to, people hate the Killers for their earnestness. And, like, I think that's a big part of, like, I think that's a big, like, Gen X millennial divide, by the way. Like, I really like earnest music as long as it doesn't pretend to be something else.
Yeah.
And so Mumford & Sons doesn't really pretend to be anything else. It is earnest music made by people in like an old timey tradition that's very open about its old timiness, and so I don't think there's anything like bad about trying. And a bunch of these newer bands that I really like the 1975 or
Ooh,
you know
love
people
it if we made it. How about that song?
It's a great song.
Oh, unbelievable.
But so that song, there's a song on that album called Sincerity Is Scary. And, like, I think that really sums up sort of, like, the millennial mindset, which is
Absolutely.
That, like, you know, like, sincerity and earnestness, which is something that was, it was really cool to affect a sort of, like, Bret Easton Ellis shithead, like disaffected nature where the only interesting thing was ironic detachment. Like,
sure.
You would hate Mumford & Sons.
Yeah. But I think like, that's not as, I mean, obviously the mainstream is always the mainstream, so I don't think that that's, like... It's attributed to millennials as a whole, but certainly for the cool, like what's hip or whatever.
Sure.
And, like, I love earnest music too, but you know what I love more? Earnest movies.
Do you really?
Earnest Goes to Camp.
I knew you were going there. I knew you were going there.
No, I want to say really quickly
the importance of being Earnest Goes to Camp.
Of course. Adrian from Lansing, Michigan says, I just don't understand this song. It's pleasant enough, but I don't get the meaning of it, so I don't like it on a deeper level.
Mm.
Thanks, Adrian.
Fuck off, Adrian.
Take the time to write that.
Adrian, if we didn't like everything that you didn't understand, we'd have to hate everything. Okay, next comment.
Except for East Lansing local politics.
Take that, Lance. I just want to roast individually everybody based on their comments.
All right, let's see if there's another one. Elizabeth from Anytown. Whoa!
Anytown.
Elizabethtown. Says, this is such a good song, although I didn't like their performance at the Grammys. It was weak, man. It was weak. Smiley face.
Is she Cartman?
Elizabeth, I don't know where any town is, but you should fucking stay there because...
just go to no town.
Savage, yeah. Any town's wiped off the goddamn map.
Damn. Edelman roasted. Done did it on the ass.
Speed roasted. Wait, these aren't our friends. These are
no, that wasn't Facebook.
Who are these? Who are these absolute shitheads? I don't respect
these
anybody.
Are randos. These are random comments I found.
I will say, I have a very distinct memory of it being in college and at the end of a party when everyone had cleared out, me and like two of my male friends just like screaming along to that song at the end when it goes. And
it's so fun.
Like, oh my god,
that's the best shit. And like I've referenced this before. This is a perfect time for me to be into earnestness because it was 2011 that I got into them. That was right after I like got out of a really bad relationship and sure. I moved home and I was just this was like the sort of music I would drive to and just scream in my car. And also any band that can put fuck into their lyrics, like I was, especially mainstream. Yeah, I really fucked up this time. It was like right there. But those two songs I would go back and play back and forth and over again. So good. Let's see. Let's go to Facebook. We don't have a ton of Facebook comments because I posted a little late.
Sure.
But as always, we're going to Facebook because we do support Mark Zuckerberg.
Everything
as
he
always.
Does, everything he says.
I love you, Mark.
Let's see here. Patrick Murray. I said we're talking Mumford & Sons if anybody's got thoughts. And by the way, if you want to join in on this in the future, add me on Facebook. Or I guess... I don't know how you would do this if you're not friends with me on Facebook.
Should do it as a fan page. Make your own fan page.
Yeah, maybe we'll make a fan page.
What's your
problem? It's been almost, you know, what's your problem?
What's
your
problem?
I assume these are from the fan page, to be honest with you.
No, these are, making a fan
page.
Come on, it's
2015
for
Christ's sake. Make a fan page.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, we'll make a fan page. If we make a fan page, will you guys fucking join it?
Yeah.
It's going to be embarrassing.
Don't make a verbal contract, just make the fan page.
11 of you
are
like,
make the fan page.
All right, we'll make a fan page.
Make a fan page, right?
Dumb, Dakar, you have to make the fan page.
Come on, I'm focusing you.
And the fan page like... Sorry.
Work. That's just the rest of the show. All right.
I wish there was a way of finding out exactly how many people turned off the podcast.
Right at that moment.
Right at that moment.
All right. Patrick Murray writes, trash.
Thanks, Patrick.
Justin Hill, our good buddy, wrote, I once had to sit through 3-hour sound check with them and Sam Smith, and it made me very mad at them. 3-hour sound check. Damn.
That's why they're so good. That's why they're so good. A 3-hour sound check. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. We did a 3-hour sound check before this podcast today. We rehearsed every one of these riffs. Alex Price says, I saw them after their first big record dropped at Deer Creek, and people were dressed like they were boarding the Titanic.
That's very
funny. He said,
funny.
Not a bad live show, though, to be honest.
It seems like that's most of the hate is fashion-based.
Absolutely, which I think is kind of stupid.
What did Liam... I sent it to you. What did Liam Gallagher from Oasis say?
Oh, I didn't realize you said it.
Really
I also looked this up.
I love
he said
Liam
a couple
Gallagher.
Different things.
He had a funny
but
burn.
He said they look like fucking Amish people.
Yep,
you know them ones with the big sideys that don't use electricity?
Big
growing
sideys.
Their own food and putting barns up?
I want a Liam Gallagher dictionary where he defines everything by which starts with, you know them ones that hops around with the with the big pouches on the front where they put little ones in there? And you're like... kangaroos, and he's like, yeah. And then they're like, he's like, you know the ones that are yellow and slippy, and you're like, bananas? And he's like, yeah.
You trip he's a like, Mario with them or something?
You know the ones where your mom tells you not to look into them when they're on, and you're like, microwaves? And he's like, yeah, you know the ones.
Before. Is that a thing?
That yeah, just your mom.
My mom told me to stare into the microwave.
My mom told me to put my head in one.
We poked a hole in our microwave, and I was supposed to stare into it as it went. Yeah, we got a few more comments.
You know
here.
Them ones.
You know them ones. You know that the sun, the big one, the ones that have
you know
been all
round,
bright.
The round hot thingy? What would you burn your skin if you don't wear some screen? And you're like, the sun? He's like, yeah.
What with?
You know the one that that has an effect on moons and periods? And you're like, the moon? He's like, yeah.
You know the ones that are buried in a tomb and they're wrapped in toilet paper?
And you're like,
the mummies?
Yeah. Mummies? Yeah!
We are a Halloween-themed podcast.
Yeah, sorry.
All right, let's hear...
Oh, but for the Amish, yeah. The hate is... they dress like revivalists. What do you want?
It's like they're having fun. Who cares? I don't know. That doesn't bother me. Although Shannon Norman did write, are you recording this episode on an Edison phonograph cylinder? Nice burn.
Very funny.
Which
Does anyone
one?
Have any actual gripes for Mumford & Sons? Or is
Let's
this?
See here. There's some legit commentary on it. I don't know if they're gripes.
Go ahead.
Kevin Frolic says, first album, incredible start to finish. Second album tries to be the first album and sounds like the songs they left off of the first album. Third album is god-awful. The electric guitar-fueled rock album. And
that
the
must
most
be Wilder Minds, yeah.
And the most recent one is so aggressively okay that it'll be heard in doctor's offices waiting rooms for years to come.
Well, that is a solid review from Pitchfork. For
yeah.
The,
so Pitchfork but, gave the third album a 2.0.
Yes. So nobody liked the third album, which I love.
Oh, really?
I don't love... So
Did
I like
you give
the
us
album.
Any songs
I think
you
left it
album?
Off the playlist.
No, I didn't do any... I have no songs from Wilder. So I don't love the album as much as... But I like the risk... that they did going away from their producer from the first two albums. They said it was a natural progression. They say this song is a natural progression, or they say this album is a natural progression. And I love any band that ever reinvents itself. I love Bob Dylan for doing it. I think it was so cool of them to try, and some would say not succeed with Wilder. What?
Yeah.
They took a big swing, and they could have. And the new one, by the way, is closer, I'd say, stylistically, to the third one than the first two. Mm-hmm. And Delta. It's doing really well. It's critically acclaimed. It'll get a bunch of nominations for things, I think. And like, they made this hard, not crossover, but they made this hard progression. And this one, Marcus says this is pretty heavily R&B influenced. And what I almost sent you was, he said there's one R&B, if I find it, will you play it? R&B song where...
While you look for it, why don't we play the song you gave us off Delta?
Sure. And then I've got a couple more Facebook things that are, I think are interesting. Caitlin Grissom writes, there's a vague romantic misogyny / slut-shaminess to the lyrics that I can't quite describe, and that just makes it more annoying. It's like LaCroix flavor amount of sexism. Like, I just feel like if you dated the singer, he would ask you to never mention your previous boyfriends. I don't know. I wish that there was more... Caitlin, write into us and give me more of... could you be more elaborate?
Because
I don't
heard,
totally...
I've never
I'd have to know exactly what you mean to have that be, you know...
Mm-hmm. I've never heard that take on Mumford & Sons, to be honest.
Like, I'm not saying I disagree. I haven't listened to them enough to know, but a lot of their stuff just sounds a little bit not specific to me. But apparently, I mean, I don't know. It seems like the guy has a nice relationship with his wife.
He's married to Carrie Mulligan.
Yeah, yeah.
Is he?
From
I first saw her in Education, but she isn't.
This is the song. It's by a R&B artist named Jai Paul with not that many listeners, but the song's called Jasmine. The song's called Jasmine. I don't really... I wonder if... Yeah, you know what? I can see a little bit of the impact of this on Delta. I'll fast forward. See, like, I think these guys are genuine in trying stuff that they... I think R&B has had such an effect on popular music. Like, electronic R&B has influenced a whole bunch of these, like, art pop bands that are really popular.
Definitely
with,
1975.
Like, yeah, definitely the 1975. Yeah. I mean, and, like, those guys are really, like, hardcore influenced by, like, D'Angelo and sort of, like, early 2000s Kanye. And, like, I think that's become... I think that's sort of filtered down to a... it's interesting what filters down to the mainstream, because like Mumford & Sons is the filtering down of the old Cro-Madison show, and like the filtering down of like T-Bone Burnett, very niche, like Oh Brother Where Art Thou soundtrack type stuff, and sort of the distillation of it in a popular style. And I think, you know, sort of like electronica type music, like Gary Newman, I think has had who's like a, you know, 80s electronic artist from the UK is very niche.
While you're talking, some of this Guiding Light.
Guiding Light's off Delta.
Off Delta.
This has done really well. This song is great, by the way. I really like this one. But hear that little backbeat? That little backbeat that's, you know. When I heard your voice, the distance.
by surprise again. And I know you claim that you're all right, but fix your eyes on me. I guess I'm all you have, and I swear you'll see the dawn. Become blind, 'cause even when there is no star in sight, you'll always be my only guiding light.
See the rhythm.
Well, I'm still,
it's like a blend of R&B and Americana. It's more Americana. But like, this is what they did in Wilder. This is what they tried to do on the mm-hmm. on the third album, and this is what they're doing to reasonable success on the fourth album. And I bet you they, you know, like, I wouldn't be surprised if they have left behind a lot of, you know, the four string instruments in, you know, 8 to 10 years. Like, I love any band that takes big swings.
Well, you have to also, but mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of, you're kind of a screwed if you do, screwed if you don't. Because
yeah,
they kept
yeah.
making that album again. People just keep saying they're making that album.
Exactly. Yeah.
Whoever
yeah.
said like the Interpol second did. Album yeah. was the first album. Like, yeah. The second album was the one that went, Babel went absolutely stratospheric. Like, Sign No More.
Yeah, it was number one, I think. Yeah.
Oh, it debuted at number one. It's the fastest selling album
in
a decade.
The second and third albums went number one.
Did Wilder go
I
number one?
I believe
it did. The second definitely did.
The second was.
I thought that I read that it did.
Second was absolutely mind-blowing.
Well, I Will
when
Wait
it came
was
out.
Such a big hit, too. That was everywhere.
Oh, my God.
It was inescapable.
But it was, yeah. it was completely inescapable, but nobody...
Wilder debuted at number one in the UK and the US, according to Wikipedia.
Oh, I'm sure that's
and,
true.
Babel became the fastest-selling rock album of the decade.
Totally.
Wow.
Babel was the... I think Babel was the, you know... who is their producer? Marcus, what's his name?
That I do not.
Marcus Dans or Davs or something. He produced all the good Arcade Fire stuff we love, and he worked with them on the first two albums, and he absolutely nailed their sound, which is just like,
oh, Marcus Dravs.
Yes,
yeah.
he sort of I guess subtly shifted them. It feels like towards a more distilled, more like poppy Americana, mm-hmm. and so Babel was just Babel was. Everywhere, like
yeah.
they were the biggest band in the world for a few weeks,
for sure. Yeah,
like they were the undisputed champions, and I genuinely think that that they're good artists, and that the stuff stands up and holds out, and so I'm excited for their fifth album, which is boy, I didn't realize how much I liked them till I was like, until I was like listening to them. I also think you can make me defend almost anything, so maybe there's some of this, but
this is I Will Wait, by the way. I'm just gonna play these while we talk because we are running out of time, unfortunately.
Sure.
Well, I can't
home like a stone. You're nodding your head listening to this.
Great harmony.
Days of darkness, wish we'd known, will blow away with this new sun. But I
says this song presented a huge challenge for the band and producer Marcus Dravs to wrestle it into a shape that they were happy with. Marcus Mumford recalled to the BBC, "I remember Marcus Dravs sitting on the end of my bed in a residential studio in Paris going, 'Come on, mate, just come on.' And I was like, 'No, no, no, I can't do it again.' But we just kept going and eventually got there."
Wow, what a riveting story. The bridge of this is amazing. I want to fast forward to the bridge.
Ticket to the bridge. I wish it was just that.
Every bridge
Ow
becomes
way.
That.
Ticket to the bridge. more flack or like accusations, I guess, for being Jesus-y.
Yeah, I mean, that's some of the comments on this stuff.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it's just that it's because they're vague. It's the same thing with the political shit where it's like they're so vague that it's hard to nail it down sometimes.
But for me, I hit pause. I shouldn't hit pause. But
oh,
like,
no, that's all right.
For me, like, I think like when people would really hate on Creed for being Christian band, like they never explicitly use the word Jesus. Like, I think I've heard Jesus in some of these songs.
Creed's symbology was so obvious, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god!
My sacrifice.
Yeah, the music video for Higher by Creed is has someone done a Creed episode?
We did do one. Yeah.
And
oh
also,
my goodness!
Melissa Viasanorba will be defending Creed this weekend, January 13th at Union Hall.
You need to listen to Scott Stapp's solo album is very overtly religious.
I fell into a Creed wormhole on YouTube on YouTube and Wikipedia a few weeks ago, and like there were a whole bunch of Creed doesn't suck that bad articles, and then there was one gleeful profile when there's a detail that sticks out so broadly at me, which is Scott Stapp. The journalist says Scott Stapp pulls out a vape and he says, "If I'm going to vape unless you're going to write about it." To which I responded, "I'm definitely going to write about it." And then Scott Stapp put it back. Like, that's sort of the attitude, which is like, Scott Stapp vapes, that's all you need to know. But here's 10,000 other words beating the shit out of Scott Stapp. Do you know, Scott Stapp tried to kill himself, and someone saved him. A famous rapper saved Scott.
R. Kelly. Talked about that.
No, it's not R. Kelly.
Speaking of someone who should, I will wait.
Oh, my God. I don't like any of these jokes.
By the way, that documentary, horrifying. Ooh,
I have not seen it yet, but I probably won't. I was never an R. Kelly fan.
Everybody should watch it.
Yeah,
it's fucked up.
I love an episode of your podcast devoted to R. Kelly.
You're not
going to get it.
Really?
That's our new catchphrase.
I can't wait for a comedy spinoff where I will be defending William H. Cosby. I was at a table a few weeks ago, and someone's like, "But the comedy is great." And I was like, "It's not anymore.
Yeah.
The lie of omission seems pretty huge."
Uh-huh.
But for Mumford, in terms of like, hard segue back to Mumford.
Nice transition.
Any crimes that Mumford has committed? I mean, like, look, they do. I couldn't believe how much hate they got when I started reading. When I started reading about them online, like there are articles like "Don't let Mumford and Sons trick them into liking you." They have a video with Will Forte and Ed Hemsen.
Uh-huh. Oh, really?
This is "Hold On to What You Believe."
Hold on to what you believe.
So is this only live? This song? I had trouble finding it.
Oh,
on Spotify. The only version I could find was this version.
What is this from? The Shepherd's Bush Empire.
I can't promise you that I won't let you down.
Yeah, if you're listening to this podcast, you may not know this one, because I only know this because someone else has played this. I will be the only one around. It's from Sigh No More.
When you're
But it's a deep cut, and it's a live favorite, like the fans.
But we are
like
open flowers in the windy
like
fields
this
in this war-torn.
They get also a lot of flack for their literary references. For being influenced by like Shakespeare and shit like that.
The city breathes the plague of loving things more than their creators.
One thing that I find really hard to translate from live to album is the horns that you hear at a live show, especially for a revivalist band or an Americana band. A horn section is so huge. There's no way to really. I've never heard it sonically. Like,
it was too
goosebumpy.
Casting love on
in a,
me
in a car on an album or something like that.
This is another one that could either be about a girl or God. They ride the line on that a lot of times.
I don't think that they make religious music. I do think that they tend to go for. I don't even know that what the songs are about matters so much as who the songs are influenced by.
Uh huh.
Like, I think a lot of their music seems to be subtle subversions of stuff that would really feel comfortable coming out of a sort of like Old Crow Medicine Show album or a T-Bone Burnett album. Like, I think a lot of their, like, I've never, like, some bands I'm like, oh, I wonder what the song's about. But with a Mumford album, the lyrics are actually vague. I think that's something that they get that you could conceivably give them flack for, but
that's something that I personally would give them flack for.
Sure.
I talk about it on the show a lot. Lyrics are big to me, so I'm a little lyric bitch. I like the heady, and I like but some of their lyrics speak to me and stuff, but
Little Lion Man in the Cave are huge.
Yeah. The way that they do the pickups on their voices. Mm-hmm. Do it for me.
I think they have a few Ivor Novello nominations for good writing. The writing is critically acclaimed. It's just not been.
It's also critically shit on sometimes. That, or at least their newer stuff. That was one of the articles that I was just reading. I like a lot of it, but yeah, it's a little bit up for interpretation on some of these. But I know I typically enjoy it. I enjoyed a lot of this playlist, lyrically, and just it's fun music. I don't give a shit. That thing at the beginning that we played, I just like hearing that stuff. But I don't think that just because you can copy what somebody does means it's bad. Like, I don't think that just because you find the formula means it's a bad thing.
I don't think they're copying a formula, but I think they're firmly in a tradition. Like, I would accuse the Lumineers of copying a formula, to be honest with you. Like, that to me is, but I like, if you like the people that I would put close to, and I'm not saying that the lyrics are bad, I'm just saying that, like, Are you a fan of The National?
I love The National.
They're
one of my favorite
also.
Bands, yeah.
And I think like Mumford & Sons, and I mean, people would probably go crazy hearing this, but like, I think the Mumford & Sons and The National tend to, The National writes in a much, much ostentatiously funnier way.
Yes, they're funny, and like, that's, I mean, The National is classic what I would love, because they're so lyric heavy, and that guy's voice is a major part. It's so good.
Like, oh, I mean, I love that stuff.
But it's
like,
also funny, and like, I just think that guy's a genius.
Matt Berenger, I think his name is. But like, I don't think Matt Berenger and Marcus Mumford, I think they share a bunch of similar influences.
Uh-huh.
I think that they've probably, you know, would both say that they're in different directions. Yeah. But like, I really feel like you can draw lines. You can draw like bold lines between the people that have had an influence on Mumford and the people that have had influence on Matt Berenger. And like, I do think that they grew pretty organically out of love of similar music. That's not an original thought. I remember hearing that on a podcast recently. I heard on a podcast or an EVR radio show a little while ago. But like, yeah, I think that there are some people who really get into the lyrics of Mumford & Sons, but like I'm not one of those.
Yeah,
those
guys. I just want to say, so nobody annoys me, it's Matt Berninger.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I knew as I was saying it, I was like, something's wrong here.
Just so people don't give a shit about it.
Stay out, super. That scene from The Fighter.
So good.
Or not for The Fighter. Have you seen the movie Warrior?
No.
I never saw the Tom Hardy movie?
Tom Hardy movie, one of the most underrated movies I've ever seen in my entire life.
Is that good?
It's so good. Wow. It's by the guy who did Miracle, Gavin O'Connor. And like, by the way, I'm saying so much underrated or maligned stuff that people are just going to be like, this dude's taste is really shitty. But like, I also like, you know, I don't know. But like, they're really solid. They're really solid movies. And there's a scene that's completely scored almost by The National's About Today.
Uh-huh.
And it's so I'll play it for you in the podcast.
That. Yeah.
Just that scene.
I want to point out really quickly before we wrap up, I've never seen this before, but on every one of Mumford & Sons' YouTube videos, there's the top comment is this band called Smith & Thell. And the comment is, if just one person reads this, it'll honestly make our day. We are a folk pop duo from Sweden, and I know people will write this all the time, but I believe we'll be the one you're happy you listen to. If one person can give this a thumbs up, you'll be one step closer to helping a band's dreams come true. Normally, those comments don't have any heat. This is 500 like thumbs up.
Oh,
this
wow.
gets sure. on every one of them. Everybody's like, this is great.
Give it a thumbs up.
I'm gonna
up
give
right
you
now.
A thumbs up, guys. I respect.
I will
the
never
hustle.
Listen to your music, but I will definitely. Give you a thumbs
you know
up.
What? Next episode, we're defending Smith and Thell.
God, but they are
crazy.
They completely restarted interest in a dead genre. Like Elton John reinvigorated the like piano people like Leon Russell. Totally. And like, you know, like there are a whole bunch, like Eric Clapton has revived so many bands that were like dead and genres that were dead. And like these guys totally did that for the, like, I would say that like Bob Dylan was helped by Maggie's Farm, as like that Maggie's Farm and the Grammys in 2011 as Mumford and Sons were, because like these genres have like, they faded from like this tent revivalism. Totally faded from American popular music charts. Like, no one cared. And then they were the fastest selling band in a decade because people wanted that music back. And, like, it sounded new to people who hadn't heard it before. So, like, yeah, that's my...
All right. We have heard the arguments of Alex Edelman. Tommy, what do you think of this playlist?
I think it was great. I like Mumford & Sons. I'm going to give it a 4. I'm going to take away 2 points, one for each time you vocalized that you didn't like a riff of mine. And...
Okay. I was being facetious, but I can't break care. I resent you more for making me say that I did like it.
Oh, he'll keep going down.
quickly, Mr. Edelman, quickly. It is funny, though, because I think it's more hack to not like them than it is. People think that they're hack, but it's actually hack to be like they're the hipster, you know, band. And it's really, I think it is a lot based on the way they dress. And
yeah.
I love those. I mean, Cave and Little Line Man are still bangers, and I like those a lot. And I Will Wait, I think, was just overplayed. But when I listen to it now, and I haven't heard it in 3 years, it's like,
I forgot that it wasn't from Psy No More, and that made me annoyed because it did feel like the same thing to me,
it
almost. It does. It feels like exactly like
I
the
think
other
the first two
me.
Albums are very cohesive, and if anything, Babel's a little more distilled.
I want to read from Facebook real quick.
Are there any really great comments on Facebook?
Well, Brandon Kirkman said something similar to what you said, where it's like, I don't know if I hate their music more or all the open mic comics who use their name as a punchline from 2013 to 2016.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like hacky to hate on them just generically without actually talking about it. I really like some of this, and I like the guy's voice a lot. I like their sound. Like I said, I don't disagree. I don't think being able to copy what they, or being able to replicate what they do, makes them bad. But I didn't love all of it. I think I was going to go 4.25, I think. And you know what? I'm going to fucking stick with that.
All right.
Why not?
4.25.
What do you give the playlist?
Out of what?
6.
Out of 6.
Yeah, that's what I thought might be the case. Because you took 2 away and gave me a 4, and I've listened to previous episodes where you've... I just want to be...
What are you, a math wizard?
Yeah. I'm going to give it an 1,100. I don't know. Mumford & Sons, I give it a 5 and change.
Okay.
I'm going to be like, 6, they're perfect. But I'll give them a 5. But what I really like is how consciously they work towards new shit. And I really like, I have a soft spot for anyone who is ambitious and trying. And I have a soft spot for anyone who's trying. Like anyone who's trying and trying to. It'd be one thing if they were just like trying to make big sounding arena stuff. Like the accusations some people make about like Coldplay or other popular stuff. But like, I truly believe that like the music they make is like who these guys are.
Yeah.
And like their natural progression of like the stuff they love. It seems like they're a really good amalgamation of the stuff they love, the stuff from the scene that they came up with, and the stuff that they're trying to get to. So that is why I would give them 5 and something. All right.
Perfect. All right, this has been a great time. Thanks so much for coming
on,
man.
Coming.
You want to plug stuff again?
Sure. The Virgil in Los Angeles on the 30th of January. The San Francisco Sketch Fest on the 26th of January. My name's Alex Edelman, and you can find me on all various forms of social media. And it's not been announced yet, but I'm doing the Kennedy Center on March 7th.
Holy shit. That's incredible.
That'll be fun. So,
the Kennedy Center. And
so,
hey,
in D.C. So.
And you're at Alex Edelman?
I'm at Alex Edelman on Twitter and at
Tweet
the Alex
your
Edelman
thoughts
on
Mumford & Sons. And if you had a good time listening to this, give them a little shout out. You know, we like our guests to get
I'm so curious to hear what people have to say about Mumford & Sons.
People, yeah, we want some interaction. We've gotten and also tweet us at Stand By Your Band Pod, I believe, or just Stand By Your Band, I can't remember, but Yeah, I always we look at those. It's a fun time. And hey, maybe we'll start a little
go
fan
see
page.
Tom's go see Tom's half hour run in Blue.
Oh yeah,
oh my god,
go see that. I'll also be taping my half hour special.
Don't watch
New
that.
Orleans,
like,
New Orleans, January 31st. So if you're in that area, come hang out. I'll be doing some shows around that area.
That'd be cool.
A couple days before, come see me and Tommy's live Stand By Your Band, Battle of the Bands at Union Hall, January 13th. Tickets are still $7 right now. They're going to go up day of. Get them soon because I think it's going to be packed.
Hell yeah.
Hell of a lineup. Tommy, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, just check my website for dates. Hell and, yeah. Yeah, I'm excited.
Thanks for listening to the episode, guys. Get on the Patreon if you're into that sort of shit, you piss freak. Hey, keep it crispy. Bye.
K-Rock.